Welcome to an audio cast for this Friday, June 6, 2008, from AvWeb, the world's premier independent aviation news service. Brought to you by IFR, the magazine for the accomplished pilot. You can check it out at www.ifr-magazine.com. Well, on Saturday, May 24th, 2008, Mr. Howard Levinson of Glenview, Illinois, who will turn 85 years old in June, became the oldest person to ever earn his ATP. He may even make the Guinness Book of World Records. Although he isn't expecting any airline job offers right away, we thought it would be interesting for you to meet Howard and find out why he did this at age 85. And we've got him with us today. Howard, how are you?
Well, I'm just fine, thank you.
Excellent. So you're in Glenview. Is that close to Chicago?
Yes, on the northern suburb of Chicago.
Before we get to the tantalizing details of you going for your ATP rating, what's the first memory you have of wanting to fly airplanes?
When I was about 5 years old.
Well, back then it would have been like biplanes and stuff, huh?
Well, my uncle, as a matter of fact, had a monoplane, open cockpit airplane in his garage in Chicago with the wings off, and I used to get in that airplane and make believe I was flying, and I think that was the beginning of my passion.
That'll put aviation in your blood for sure right there.
Correct.
And after that, Howard?
Something happened on December 7th, 1941. Perhaps not everybody knows, but that was Pearl Harbor. Okay. I was in Wright Junior College at the time. It was my first inclination that education was important, so I started to work because I really wanted to become an aviation cadet.
And what was the procedure for achieving that?
Oh, aviation, you had to join the service, become an aviation cadet.
All right.
So I joined out of college. I had a year and a half at Wright Junior College. I was finally accepted as an aviation cadet, and started flying in November of 1943.
In what branch? I guess the Army?
Army. That was, at that time, it was the Army Air Force.
Mm-hmm. Army Air Force. And what kind of equipment did you fly back then?
Started in a PT-19, then I flew a BT-13, then I flew the AT-11, or the Bamboo Box, Bamboo Bomber.
Right.
I got my multi-engine rating. Went from there to Liberal, Kansas, and took my B-24 transition, and graduated from there as a B-24 airplane commander.
Wow.
Then I went through my bomber training. I was a bomber pilot, airplane commander, and we were ready to ship out to Europe. I lived off the base. I was recently married. My co-pilot said to me, we want to go on this photo mission, because I went to bomber training, and I think, well, I'm going to be a bomber pilot. And I said, well, I don't want to volunteer for anything. The squadron came in and said, who wants to volunteer for this photo mission? He was sitting on my left, and he raised my hand. So, lo and behold, I went to Oklahoma City for 2 months or so to learn how to do photo recon in B-24s, then called F-7s. And instead of going to Europe, I went after that training to pick up an airplane in Savannah, Georgia, flew across the United States, across the Pacific, into ended up in the Philippines for about over a year, stationed in an island 300 miles south of Manila for about 7 months, and then spent the rest of the term in the tour of duty at Clark Field. We did other things, but the main job was to map Borneo.
Right.
Well, we never were attacked by any Japanese planes. The war was still on. Mm-hmm. It looked like we were going to be there for years and years and years. I didn't learn until 50 years later that the reason we weren't attacked by any airplanes is all the Japanese planes were taken back to the homeland in preparation for the invasion that the United States was building up at the time.
Sure.
And along came a guy by the name of Paul Tibbets and dropped a bomb on Japan, which was the beginning of the end of the Japanese, and I was able to come home.
So when you came home, you were still in the military, right?
Oh, sure. Well, I was in the military, then they released me when I finally did get home in 46.
Mm-hmm.
And I belonged to the reserve out of O'Hare Field, flying C-46s, AT-6s, AT-11, as a flight instructor.
Mm-hmm.
In both transition and instruments. Years went by, and I raised a family and couldn't fly too much, and really became very much involved again in 1980 and flew to the present time. Through all this time, I've been a flight instructor, been very much involved in aviation. And one of my friends who was an examiner said to me, you know, your number, which is 393050, my certificate number, he says, that's the lowest number I've ever seen. Why are you just a commercial pilot and not a ATP? I said, well, I never really thought about it. And that was about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So finally, I thought, you know, I want to know if I'm still able to do what I thought I could do, because I know the older I get, the better I was.
Right.
And I decided to take the challenge, and I intensified the challenge by going with the Garmin 1000 and the Diamond Twin Star, which is entirely different. From my, I have a 421.
Right.
I fly, and flying steam gauges and transitioning to a Garmin glass cockpit, all glass cockpit, was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's like learning the ABCs backwards or something like that. I don't know. It was just a very difficult transition for me. Now, if you're a computer savvy guy and you're 30 years old, maybe it would happen much quicker. But it took me quite a bit of a transition to learn how to fly that Garmin 1000.
Were there any other of the requirements for the ATP especially challenging for you?
Well, the written was not fun. I mean, I finally passed the written, but it was work. The challenge was really flying the Diamond Twin Star. The first day that I got into it, I couldn't hold altitude in a steep turn, and I could fly my plane in steep turns with my hands in my lap.
Right.
It was just a very difficult, squirrely airplane for me to learn. But I finally did it, and the rest is history.
Tell us about your examiner for the check ride. What kind of reaction did you get from him?
Well, it was hard. You know, when I finished, I was really sweating because it was hard work. It didn't come easy. I never really had a problem flying as I was a flight instructor, and a civilian flight instructor since the early 80s. And I know what has to be done. I know if I'm doing well, and I don't have to be told if I'm doing badly.
So how would you feel about being in the Guinness Book of World Records?
I think it'd be interesting. That's about all I can say about that. I will probably apply, just for kicks.
Yeah. You said something in a news release that I read, that as one becomes older, you want to send out the message that you can still maintain your health and a vigorous lifestyle. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, up until just about a year or two ago, I was skiing, and my wife hasn't been feeling that well, so I really haven't gone skiing. And I was playing tennis, but I tore my rotator cuff, so I had to stop skiing. But I'm still weigh about 182 pounds. I'm about 5'10 and a half. I'm certainly not obese, and I try to keep myself in good shape. I'm very active in many organizations, like the Chicago Flight Instructors Association, Milwaukee Airport Pilots Association at Chicago Executive. I've been a member of a flying club for about 20-some-odd years, president, maintenance officer. I'm a Shriner, and I fly burn victims' children occasionally to Cincinnati. I also was involved in Flightline for a number of years.
Howard, what advice would you give to somebody, even that might be 30 years younger than you, that has always, you know, had that passion in the back of their mind that thinks they're just too old to learn to fly?
I think that's nonsense. As long as you physically are capable, you can pass a physical. If you have a desire to fly, you can do it. Now, there are people starting to fly in their 30s and 40s and 50s.
Well, Howard, you have quite a story. Do you have a chance to get out there often and share all this?
I frequently give talks because I was in photo recon. I have a whole slew of pictures going back to World War II, practically up to the present. I usually start my little talk by telling everybody I have two dreams. The first dream was I was a little boy. I dreamt that one day I would be flying. My dream today is I dream about what I did back when I was flying World War II.
Right.
Those are my two dreams.
So are you available to go out and speak to various aviation groups or other interested groups?
I've done that numerous times.
Well, all right. Well, we'll put your contact information in the article if that's cool with you.
Oh, Oh, sure. I've done numerous talks to mostly senior groups because I don't know how many young people are interested in it.
Right, right.
I have done it probably 6 or 7 different times, 8 times.
Well, have you started your book yet?
No. When I'm going to write a book? When I lose my medical. I'm not going to do it now. I'm enjoying everything too much.
That's a good plan. You know, Howard, you lived a lot of the history that most of us watch on the History Channel, and I'm jealous of that just a little bit.
Don't be jealous. A fellow by the name of Larry Garina was a prisoner of war in Viet Cong. He was at the Hanoi Hilton, I think it was 7 or 8 years. And I knew him. He wrote a book, and I read the book. And Larry Garina said to me when I said, you know, I was called up to go to Korea in 1951. He says, well, just be thankful that you didn't, because it wasn't worth it. Even though he was a solid Catholic, he still wanted to commit suicide. That's how they brutalized him. You know, I feel I'm a very, very lucky guy.
And in my estimation, a very important person in America, in American history, and the aviation community. Special thanks to Alan Goldstein of Aerial Images of Illinois for helping us get in contact with Howard. And if you would like to get in touch with Howard to talk over some American history or find out about some of the activities he's involved in or possibly have him speak in an organization or group that you're involved with, here's his email address. HOWDL, all lowercase, HOWDL at sbcglobal.net. That's HOWDL at sbcglobal.net. Comments on today's audiocast, welcome, audionews@avweb.com. Today's audiocast was brought to you by IFR, the magazine for the accomplished pilot, ifr-magazine.com. And for breaking general aviation news, of course, www.avweb.com. Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening.